Forever Dog.
She was the last. This week on the podcast, Peter Beagle's The Last Unicorn.
Welcome to Teen Creeps, the podcast that discusses YA pulp fiction. We are continuing Fantasy February. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Gaita.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent.
And we are covering The Last Unicorn, the fantasy classic by Peter S. Beagle.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray!
Love the book.
So held up for me.
Loved the book.
So good.
It completely holds up. It's so beautiful, and like it's heartbreaking in its beauty.
Yes.
And
funny.
Mm-hmm. Very funny.
And original.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love it so much.
I love the kind of like theses of this book and Neverending Story, kind of focusing on like the beauty of the ability to love and like how much power that has. Like that is so, it's just, you know, the world right now can be very like dark, and like I've kind of been in my own writing like very obsessed with like very dark themes, and like reading these two, I was like, oh, there's something so, and this book and kind of moved me to tears a little more than Neverending Story, possibly because of hormonally where I was.
It is also a touching book, but that is surprising for me just because I cried at Neverending Story, and I did get misty at this because
I didn't weep. I just got misty.
Yeah.
I just got misty. But I mean, I guess I got equally misty. I think I was just surprised that I got misty at The Last Unicorn because, you know, it was getting misty over the beauty of the story and like mm-hmm. the ideas rather than like, oh, this is really sad or heartbreaking.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, like it just felt very, I don't know.
It's just like so poignant.
Yes. And just like the whole like last bit for the unicorn's story is just so beautiful. And I felt like, and I love the movie so, so, so much, but I do like the book a lot better.
It's just fuller,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, fuller. Everyone's fuller.
You really get the wit of it. You get the comedy more.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. It just has more, like, shades, mm-hmm. I guess. Because, yeah, I agree. It's even better than the movie. And I love, love, love the movie. And I think it's a great adaptation. And he wrote the screenplay for it.
Yeah, I love the movie. And it is an excellent adaptation. And perhaps it is because he wrote the screenplay that it's the, like, the spirit of the book is very much in the movie. However, I just loved the extra, like, a lot more humor with the prince that we get. Prince Lear in the book. His poetry. I mean, I thought that was hilarious. And it makes all of that other stuff, right? Like him, like everyone was just so well fleshed out. Like he's
yeah, even though you only meet them for like a moment, mm-hmm. some of the characters, they're so clearly defined.
Yeah.
And so well written that you know them immediately. You don't even need that much time with them.
Because that was the thing with him, like when he, you know, he sees her, he falls in love with her, and he's like writing all this poetry for her. And she, I also loved that it wasn't, oh, well, he's doing all this stuff for her, so she has to be with him. You know?
Yeah.
I loved that. And I loved
that
he didn't
think that. It was very much kind of judging him for it. It's like, well, if you really loved her, you would like chill the fuck out. And then the second he does that, the second he stops asking so much of her mm-hmm. is when it happens. And it does, I mean, it coincides with her becoming more and more human, but
mm-hmm.
They do actually share a moment. It's not just like, well, you're a man and I'm a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And when she starts to forget who she was and is like, I don't want to remember who I was because then I won't love you as much. And he at first is like, okay. And then he's like, you know what? I can't take that away from you. Like, I was like, oh my God, he truly is a hero.
Yeah. I like how, and I like Lear's arc. Mm-hmm. And it, you're right. It's like Lear is better in the book because he gets an arc. In the movie, he's just like, I'm a doof. La, la, la.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, he gets an arc of, he starts off this like cowardly nothing. And we actually mm-hmm. see him before we have any idea who he is. And he's like yeah. just chilling and reading a magazine for yeah. one thing. I love how anachronistic this book is because it all feels like it takes place in like the 14th or 13th century. And then there will be these little hit, like The Butterfly Sings, Take the A Train.
Yeah.
And other yeah. modern songs. And Captain Cully offers Schmendrick a taco and is talking mm-hmm. about John Henry. And it's like, when does this take place?
Yeah.
But he starts off really cowardly. Mm-hmm. And
just like a layabout and like not, no direction.
Not anything.
Yeah.
He's just like a big nothing of a human and he knows it. And then he meets her and he's like, okay, well, to be with her, I like, she's like a lady. And so I have to be a hero. And he just like is like doing the math of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps killing creatures and going on quests. And he goes on really a lot of them.
A lot.
Like, way more time passes in the book than it seems to pass in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she just does not give a shit because she's a unicorn and he keeps killing mythical creatures. And she's like, why would I want you to do this? And like his horse gets injured in a fight. He gets burned when he's fighting a dragon and the horse dies. And she immediately hears about the horse and she's like, what did you just say?
Mm-hmm,
take mm-hmm. me to the horse. Take me to the horse. And she tries to lay hands on the horse to heal it. And he's like, why did you expect to be able to heal a horse? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then because he's play acting as a hero, he just becomes a hero.
When I also love that, like, her unicornness, right, like, teaches him more humanity almost, right? Because a lot of times, like, if we distill, like, a lot of times humanity is very inhumane. And so, like, when he brings her the dragon's head and he's like, well, first, it just like, you know, it was like a dragon's head and I felt really heroic and I show it to her and she looked at me and I realized like I'm holding like the head of a creature and it just is like this gore.
Super
and it's
gross. Yeah.
Awful. And he's like, I don't like that I felt like that, but it does change him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought like, I was just like, that is so, and then, oh my God, just like all this stuff, like at the end, I mean, I know we're skipping a lot because just,
I imagine most of the listeners know the story of the last unicorn.
Yeah.
But we can go over it briefly.
Sure.
But I say skip to the end and talk about it and we'll.
Yeah. I just like the, I love, 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 love also, because like Schmendrick is kind of our lens a little bit.
I love Schmendrick so much more in this book.
I love Schmendrick so much.
I love him so fucking much. He's so pathetic.
Yes, and I love Molly Grew. Like
I love her even more.
I love her. Ugh. Like, okay, the part that I got really misty was when she first sees the unicorn. And she's yes. like, how could you come to me like this when I'm this? I waited for you and I waited for you.
And yeah, young girls are supposed to see a unicorn and you never came for me. How dare you?
And it's just like, that's such a
feeling.
I've always
loved that moment so much.
I loved it in the movie.
Like so confused. He can't understand it because it's just, it's not for him. It's not.
No.
It was never like a birthright, so to speak, of his.
No.
So he doesn't understand what's taking place between them. And she's able to touch the unicorn and he can't bring himself to. And he's so jealous.
Well, I know, I love that jealousy. Detail in the book because he is cursed by Mommy Fortuna. So he and the guy that ends up getting eaten by the
Ruck, I think.
Yeah, Ruck.
Yeah.
So he and Ruck are cursed by Mommy Fortuna that they cannot touch the unicorn, but their hands.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't connect it to that. Yeah. I thought all of her magic was dead.
No, no. So that's why he can't touch her. So like the part where he's like
he's so jealous.
Yeah, he's so jealous because And he like even is like, oh, she's like flaunting. She's like touching the unicorn a bunch in front of me. Like, yeah. It was like okay, Schmendrick, like you're being a little narcissistic. I think she's just touching her.
Yeah, this is not about you and you keep making it about you.
And I love his, oh my God. And then at the end when like the unicorn is back to being a unicorn and she's free and she has already healed Lear and she touches his head for his wound. And that's another thing that didn't happen in the movie, which I was like, oh. So she touches his head for his wound to heal him. And then she touches his heart for him to show like, I remember you. And mm-hmm. like,
and also for her.
Yes. And then he's like really upset because she's leaving. And Schmendrick and Molly are like, well, you know, now he can be a hero because you can't be a hero unless you have like a really tragic backstory. Yeah. And they keep saying kind of like break the fourth wall type stuff. Like,
yeah, it's a little bit like the Neverending Story in that way. It's commenting on the story as it's happening.
Because I love that like there's a point where Molly's like, well, that's not fair. And Schmendrick's like, haven't you ever been in a storybook before?
A fairy tale before?
Like, of course we have to do it like that.
Yeah. It's like we can't let it go unfinished. Yeah. And eventually it's Lear who realizes that the most. And I liked how, so at the end when Amalthea, which is the unicorn in human form for those who are maybe lost, she's like, no, I don't want to go. I just want to stay here with you. And he's like, yeah, okay. And then Schmendrick's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. You'll both have your happily ever after right now. We can stop here. And that's what, and he's doing that on purpose, which you don't realize in the moment. Mm-hmm. And Molly Grew calls him out on it. She's like, why did you do that? You reminded him that he was a hero. Because the second he says, yeah, you can have your happily ever after now. And Lear, as the story's hero, is like, fuck, we can't have it now. This isn't the happily ever after. There would still be unicorns in the sea. This is the middle of the story. You can't have happily ever after in the middle of the story. And fuck, I got cast as the hero. And so I have to fucking help free. God damn it. All right, yeah. Let's go. And so it's a commentary on fairy tales while somehow not being ironic.
It's like Scream.
It's sincere.
It's a commentary on the thing while very much being the thing.
Yeah.
And it's a very successful implementation of that. Mm-hmm. I also loved too, right? Like, so the whole time Lear is like, I'm the hero, I'm the hero, I'm the hero. And he's like, this has to happen at this time for this to be, you know, whatever. And then by the end of the story, when Schmendrick and Molly are kind of like going off on their own and they're like, okay, well now he has to start his story as this hero because now he has this tragic backstory. Mm-hmm. And
now he has to be king.
So it's like, kind of like, oh, but maybe he wasn't the hero of this story encapsulated as we see it.
Well, he was like, the hero of this story, but this isn't his hero
story. Exactly. Yeah. And so I loved that kind of like,
because like it was the end of her story. She got her happy ending. The unicorn got her happy ending because that was her fairy tale. And he had to play his part within that. Mm-hmm. But now he has to go have a different story with a new princess.
Which was the girl that comes up to them and is like, help! And they're like, because, you got the wrong guy.
Because Schmendrick, after they save the day, and Lear's like, I really don't feel like being king. And again, Schmendrick's like, I'm so sorry, but like, that's who you are now. And so you have to.
Well, I like that he's like,
do it.
He's like, okay, you don't have to yet. Let's just like ride around on our horses.
Your land.
And just see what your land is like and see if you feel like being king.
And knowing full well that because Lear is a hero and like against his will practically at this point.
Yeah.
And
that, like, the unicorn has brought life back to the land.
Yeah, he sees that he has to now help shepherd the land into, like, mm-hmm. full recovery now that King Haggard is dead. But Schmendrick tells him, no, now you're king. This is what happens next in your story. I'm sorry if you don't like it, but this is what happens next. And you're going to, like, encounter some princess, and she'll have, like, these brothers who are like holding her captive for gold, or like maybe her brothers are being held captive, but like there's going to be some sort of like tragic story for her that you're going to be a part of. And then this princess comes by and sees Schmendrick. It's like the very end of the book. Let me see if I can find it, because it, the way it's written is so funny.
It's very funny because it's just very like, help me. Okay, here's an outline of like another book. That's what's happening with me right now.
Yeah. And so he's already basically spelled out like, no, there's going to be another princess. Like, you're done with the unicorn. I'm so sorry. And now you'll encounter somebody else and you have to be a hero to her. And then they part ways with Lear. Schmendrick and Molly are traveling. And then, so it says, they began their new journey, which took them in its time in and out of the most of the folds of the sweet, wicked, wrinkled world. And so at last to their own strange and wonderful destiny. And then not 10 minutes out, they meet a maiden. Her dress is torn and smirched. And she goes, "A rescue," she cried to him, "a rescue. And ye be a man of mettle and sympathy, aid me now. I hight the Princess Alison Jocelyn, daughter to good King Giles, and him foully murdered by his brother, the bloody Duke Wolf, who had taken my three brothers, the Princes Corin, Colin, and Kevin, and cast them into a fell prison as hostages that I will wed with his fat son, the Lord Dudley. But I bribed the sentinel and stopped the dogs." But Schmendrick the magician raised his hand and fell silent, staring up at him in wonder out of wide lilac eyes. "Fair princess," he said gravely to her, "the man you want just went that way." And she goes and chases after Lear, and they're like, oh, good.
It's very cute, and it's very funny. I found a part, because we were kind of talking about Lear's like characterization, and I found like, just, oh, first of all, I loved this too, right? That like, he, I love that like, he's basically at the beginning just potential and is just like stagnating in this like just really fucked up castle with his like creepy dad. And like the second that like Molly and Schmendrick and Lady Amalthea, nay the last unicorn, come in there, he's like, he's just like perfectly kind and like willing to help. Like, I loved the small detail of him helping Molly make the stew, like that he's peeling potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And he like really becomes friends with Molly Grew, and he like hangs out where she cooks in the kitchen, and like writes poetry and like has her about Amalthea and has her like read it and note it. And there's a part where he's like, oh, okay. And he's like, so he's telling her, you know, I'm not going to give up being a hero.
I'm going to do it part time.
Yeah. He's like, I suppose I'll keep my hand in, he muttered, but it wouldn't be for the show of it or for her to find out. It was like that at first, but you get into the habit of rescuing people, breaking enchantments, challenging the wicked Duke in fair combat. It's hard to give up being a hero once you get used to it. Do you like the first poem? And it, you can tell it's terrible because Molly Grew is so like, it certainly has a lot of feeling, she said. Can you really rhyme bloomed and ruined? And he's like, it needs a bit of smoothing out, Prince Lear admitted. Miracle's the word I'm worried about. I was wondering about grackle myself. No, the spelling. Is it one R and two L's or the other way around? Like, I just thought that was like a very cute. Oh, and then he's like, so then he like writes his poems, and then like the other knights come in and he's like embarrassed. So he leaves. And he's like, he's like moping around the castle and being like, okay, like, I shouldn't have signed the work. I think I should use a pen name like Knight of the Shadows or Le Chevalier Malamy, which is like so silly.
So stupid.
It's very cute.
So funny. And I also laughed because he's like talking to her and he's like, I don't know, she just won't look at me and blah, blah, blah. And she'll interrupt with like, well, I know. And she'll start to tell a story about her life. And Lear will be like, yeah. But like Amalthea will not let her talk about herself. He's so selfish.
I know. Well, and I think he's also just kind of dim, because he's like, I don't see how your story will help me understand my situation.
Yeah.
So
so it just doesn't seem relevant right now. So like, if we could get back to my poetry, because it's very important.
I also love to the I loved Lady Amalthea. Oh, go ahead.
Just a quick Lear thing. When they first meet, this passage is so beautiful. So they first get to the castle. The unicorn is freshly turned into Amalthea.
Mm-hmm.
And they get inside. And King Haggard and Prince Lear reveal they were acting as the sentinels of the castle because he's got a very bare bones staff. And they reveal themselves to be who they are. And this is so beautiful. So, "Hi," said Prince Lear, "glad to meet you." His smile wriggled at their feet like a hopeful puppy, but his eyes, a deep shadowy blue behind stubby lashes, rested quietly on the eyes of the Lady Amalthea. She looked back at him, silent as a jewel, seeing him no more truly than men see unicorns. But the prince felt strangely, happily certain that she had looked him round and through and down into caverns that he had never known were there, where her glance echoed and sang. Prodigies began to waken somewhere southwest of his 12th rib, and he himself, still mirroring the Lady Amalthea, began to shine.
I love that. And I also love the humor in that in that beautiful statement, right?
Because
she's like, okay. And he's like, yeah.
she's like, she doesn't see him at all. She's like, okay, I see a form there, nothing more. And he's like, oh my God, she's seen the deepest caverns of my soul.
He's like, for thine have repelled down the cavern of my soul.
Now I know myself better that she saw me.
And she's just like,
Okay.
But it is so beautiful that because he felt seen, he was more beautiful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter that she didn't see him.
Yeah.
Oh, us talking about Lear and how he's doing all these deeds, but it's demanding things of her, and he doesn't get her just because he wants her.
Mm-hmm.
So Molly is like a big old softy, and she's like, "Could you just be nice to him?"
Mm-hmm.
Molly said, "He wishes you to think of him. Knights and princes know only one way to be remembered. It's not his fault. I think he does very well." The Lady Amalthea turned her eyes to the cat again, her long fingers twisted at a seam of the satin gown. "No, he does not want my thoughts," she said softly. "He wants me, as much as the Red Bull did, and with no more understanding. But he frightens me even more than the Red Bull, because he has a kind heart. No, I will never speak a promising word to him."
Yeah.
It's good.
It's really good.
He just wants her and doesn't get why.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of the cat, I felt like the cat, this is going to be my one criticism of the movie, The Last Unicorn.
Same.
The cat should not have been a fucking pirate. Why was the cat a pirate?
Why is he a pirate? And he talked all the time.
All the time.
The cat in here is so much better.
I loved the cat in here. I loved the cat.
So much better. The cat in the movie always bugged me. He's like, so much. He is a cartoon character in a movie that is animated, but which otherwise contains no cartoon characters, if that makes sense.
Yes. No, he's like in the Black Cauldron. He's that nasty little, I hate that character.
I do too.
The little guy in Black Cauldron. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I just thought you meant the cat again.
Oh, I hate the cat character.
I've probably seen Black Cauldron, but I don't remember it. I was probably little.
It was pretty scary. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like during that scary time for Disney. You know what I mean? When they were trying to be
Henson-y.
Yeah. And they're like, why don't we do this creepy, Skeleton King guy and all this other stuff. It was pretty scary.
It was pre-Howard Ashman.
There's this little dog type guy that talks in baby talk and scuttles around and is just very Gollum-y. I was like, this is disgusting. Get this creature out of here. I hate him so fucking much. It's just and it didn't fit the rest of the movie. So it feels, it's just why do we have this character? I liked that the cat in the book was I could always talk, but I never felt like it. But she makes me feel like talking. And oh my God, him wanting to be petted by her. And refusing to let himself be petted by her.
Because then she would own him.
Yes. And cats, like, don't want to be owned.
Yep.
I was like, oh my God.
So fucking cool.
It was so cool. That's the other thing that okay, this is another criticism, actually, but I don't know how they would have done it in the movie, mm-hmm. but not including, like, the old age thing in Mommy Fortuna's.
Mommy Fortuna's role in the carnival?
Yeah.
As like, age itself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved that being in the...
Yeah.
It, and then being like, your death is in that cage, speaking of Mommy Fortuna herself, rather than... And in the movie, they make it so that she's... that. It's the unicorn's talking about the harpy.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked. And that's a detail of the book that I didn't remember before this last reread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very cool that Mommy Fortuna is herself in the carnival acting as another mythical creature.
Mm-hmm.
When the unicorn looks at her, she can feel mortality. She can feel herself aging.
And it's a cool foreshadowing of like, I can feel this body dying around me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I loved the spider.
Oh my God, the spider broke my fucking heart.
Let me see if I can find that. I'm sure that I took a photo, right? No? Oh, I did. Okay.
Oh, I did. It's fine.
Oh, I did. I did it. Okay, I didn't, but I can find it. Because there, and I think, is the spider in the movie?
No.
You just rewatched. Yeah, so that's another thing I miss being in the movie, is one of the creatures in the carnival is a spider that Mommy Fortuna has put a spell on to appear to be Arachne, weaving a web of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the spider is the only one who believes the spell herself.
Of the other creatures,
because
all the creatures, as you probably know, are not actually mythical creatures except for the unicorn and the harpy.
Mm-hmm.
And Mommy Fortuna like does magic to that, basically it's like a appearance magic that makes people that would want to see something magical see it.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, the spider believes the magic as well. And Shmendrick is telling the unicorn, you see, the spider believes. She sees those cat's cradles herself and thinks them her own work. Belief makes all the difference to magic like Mommy Fortuna's. Why, if that troop of witlings withdrew their wonder, there'd be nothing left of all her witchery but the sound of a spider weeping, and no one would hear it. And then they escape, and of course, it's minor. Looking. Oh, yeah, and she stays at the carnival for a little longer than in the movie.
Yeah, and then there's like a whole section after that that's like not in the movie either. Like in the movie, they go straight from there to being captured by Cullen or Jingle Jangle and Cullen. Whereas like in the book, they go to like a little village and like meet the mayor and this like very rich
funny
town, and then get captured by Jingle Jangle and go to Cullen. Which I think is fine. Like, I liked that part, but that's an okay omission for time for a movie.
For sure. Yeah, you can't include every part. And that was, like, while a fun bit of color, not necessary to the core story. So they escape the unicorn. So they fled across the night together, step by step, the tall man in black and the horned white beast. The magician crept as close to the unicorn's light as he dared. For beyond it moved hungry shadows, the shadows of the sounds that the harpy made as she destroyed the little there was to destroy of the midnight carnival. But another sound followed them long after these had faded, followed them into morning on a strange road, the tiny, dry sound of a spider weeping.
I was like, no.
Very
Are you
sad.
Serious?
We were so straight up sad. Told that that was going to happen, and then it still broke my heart
when
it happened.
I know. Because so like when the locks are undone, basically the magic is lifted and then the animals can just leave and they can be what they really are, which is like a chimpanzee with a twisted foot is the satyr, the
hungry dog,
as in the movie. Dude, when you were a kid, I wonder if this bothered you as much as it bothered me. When I was a kid and I watched this movie, I remember hating the fake horn on the unicorn when she was trapped.
Yeah, it looks like shit.
I was like, that horn looks like shit. It's like, why is it like all fluffy around the edges? Like, what is that?
Why doesn't it look like a fucking horn?
Yeah, I was like, why does it curve upward like a blade? Like, I was like, this is bullshit. This is a bad horn. And I remember like being so mad at Mommy Fortuna for just like making a bad horn. Like, I was like, yeah, this is ugly.
No, I did. I felt the same. I was like, ew.
Yeah.
Why do they like, why wouldn't she create a horn that looks like a fucking horn?
Also, I was like, why is it blue? Like, I was just like, it's like not a horn.
No one are you horn like mine.
Yeah.
I loved, like, Captain Cully in the movie is fun, mm-hmm, but in the book is so fun. Because he's, yeah, so pathetic, and he writes all of his own ballads about his legendary feats, of which there are none. All of his, mm-hmm, men are so annoyed by him because they don't steal from the rich and give to the poor, and they all really want to.
Well, and I love, too, that, like, all of that buildup makes the payoff of Robin Hood appearing that much, it, yeah, hits harder.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can see that he's trying to mythologize himself. And he's, and you know, he's very hypocritical. Like, he yells when Robin Hood comes. He's like, no, Robin Hood's not, like, real. Like, we're the legend. I'm the legend. And everyone's like, wait for me, Maid Marian. Yeah. Wait for me. Friar Tuck. I wanted. So loved that.
I loved, yeah, the detail. So Cully is obsessed with writing these ballads about himself. And they're all fake. And he forces his minstrel to sing them. And then it's so this is just how he's talking about his songs. So he says, I said that there were several songs about me. There are 31 to be exact, though none are in the child collection just at present. His eyes widened suddenly and he grasped the magician's shoulders.
Oh, I love
you wouldn't
this.
Be Mr. Child himself now, would you? He demanded. He often goes seeking ballads, so I've heard, disguised as a plain man. Schmendrick shook his head. No, I'm very sorry, really. The captain sighed and released him. It doesn't matter, he murmured. One always hopes, of course, even now, to be collected, to be verified, annotated, to have variant versions, even to have one's authenticity doubted. Well, never mind. Sing the other songs, Willie lad. You'll need the practice one day when you're field recorded. And I was like, recorded on what? And then later, Molly Grew says, you wrote them all yourself. Cully winced and stole a side glance at Schmendrick. They can still be folk songs, can't they, Mr. Child? He asked in a low, worried voice. After all, I'm not Mr. Child, Schmendrick said. Really, I'm not. I mean, you can't leave epic events to the people. They get everything wrong.
It's
so pathetic.
I loved that, like, how he was like, yeah, okay, you're not. And then he was like, wait.
But we don't know who you are. Yeah. I hear you. It touches the side of his nose.
Yeah. I loved that.
It's just really endearing. All the characters are so endearing.
They really are. They really are. I loved all of them. They're all so, you can just tell that, like, the author saw them as real people and therefore wrote them as real people. You know what I mean? Like, fully understood who these people were. Instead of just being like, okay, and then there's like a fucking what, like a guy, and he's, yeah, like in the way, and like, so it felt
and he's in my way.
It just felt really, I don't know. I really, really loved this book. Oh, the part that, like, also, like, very much moved me was when the unicorn is running all around at the end.
running.
She's running. But it's like, she's like, I don't know if I'm going to go back. I don't know what I'm going to do, because she's different than any other unicorn. Oh, this is another small detail that, like, not to, like, note the movie The Last Unicorn, which is insane, but, like, just, like, a small detail that I felt was very helpful in the book that answered a question that I had always had about the movie when I was a kid, was why she didn't know, like, the history of unicorns and why she wouldn't know that she's the last. because unicorns are solitary and they pretty much just hang out by themselves in their forests and glades and protect the land around them, and they don't really leave. Like, I remember being really confused when that guy's like, oh, she's the last. And she's like, I am the last unicorn. And I remember being like, what? Why doesn't she know?
Oh, I feel like I got that.
Really? I don't think I did as a kid. I remember being like, how could she not know? Because that's the other thing is, I think in the movie.
Oh, in the movie, they show them like gallivanting together.
Together, which I was like, well, then why is she alone? Is she an exile? Yeah. Is she a bad unicorn? Like, like I was really confused by that because of the portrayal of the unicorns like playing around in the field together and stuff. I was like, well, why is she alone?
No, that's a good point.
And I think that also helps to communicate the like very like ethereal and kind of like Dr. Manhattan-y vibe of unicorns in general. That they're like, you know, they're like not,
they're pretty indifferent to all things but themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dr. Manhattan-y vibes.
Well, they are like, they're just like,
no, I totally, that's a good reference.
Well, because like they're immortal. So they're like, why would I care about like a human or whatever? Like, I'm,
but at the same time, like, it's part of their nature to want to visit a young maiden.
I know.
That's just like, and, like, part lay of on the their deal lap. In this world. Oh, the moment, I think like played a little bit more dramatically in the movie when Molly Grew sees the unicorn for the first time, and not in a bad way. And I think it makes sense because you're just like not getting as much of the description of the book. Mm-hmm. But so she sees the unicorn and she's like immediately like, where have you been? Damn you, where have you been? And Schmendrick's like, hey, you can't talk to her like that.
Well, I like how at first Schmendrick's like, me? And she's like, ignores him and like keeps talking to the unicorn. When like, no, Schmendrick, not fucking you. Not what are you talking about?
Unicorn right there. And so it says, but Molly pushed him aside and went up to the unicorn, scolding her as though she were a strayed milk cow. Where have you been? Before the whiteness and the shining horn, Molly shrank to a shrilling beetle. But this time it was the unicorn's old dark eyes that looked down. I'm here now, she said at last. Molly laughed with her lips flat. And what good is it to me that you're here now? Where were you 20 years ago, 10 years ago? How dare you? How dare you come to me now when I am this? With a flap of her hand, she summed herself up. Barren face, desert eyes, and yellowing heart. I wish you had never come. Why do you come now? The tears began to slide down the sides of her nose. I just loved that description of Molly.
Yes.
Barren face, desert eyes, and yellowing heart. It's just heartbreaking. And then she just gets more and more like beautiful as they go. And she's touching the unicorn whenever she feels scared or lonely. And Schmendrick keeps eyeing her like, you fucking bitch.
Well, I also love the moment because like Schmendrick kind of starts to see her beauty. And he's like kind of falling for her a little bit. And I love the moment where Molly Grew is like so filled with love and laughter and light at seeing the unicorn at one point. And she turns and looks at Schmendrick, and the narration is like, and she was more beautiful than the unicorn in that moment. And I was like, oh, what?
So good.
I was like, oh, Molly.
And he's so good at describing characters in such an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
Where's her where's his description of Schmendrick? Dang it. Hang on. La 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 la. Where is it? Oh yeah, it's in, actually I took a photo of, oh yeah, this was it. Okay, so it is a combination of that description of Molly getting more beautiful and of Schmendrick that I loved. Because Schmendrick, we find out, is immortal. He was made immortal by his teacher, because his teacher saw, Nikos, saw in Schmendrick that he would be a great wizard, but that he was going to need like a lot of time to come around to it. And it said, okay, the land had grown leaner day by day. This is as they're traveling to King Haggard's castle to look for the Red Bull. Day by day as they traveled on, and the faces of the folk they met had grown bitter with the brown grass. But to the unicorn's eyes, Molly was becoming a softer country, full of pools and caves where old flowers came burning out of the ground. Under the dirt and indifference, she appeared only 37 or 38 years old. No older than Schmendrick, surely, despite the magician's birthdayless face. I fucking love that birthdayless face. Because he just looks so young. Her rough hair bloomed, her skin quickened, and her voice was nearly as gentle to all things as it was when she spoke to the unicorn. The eyes would never be joyous any more than they could ever turn green or blue, but they too had wakened in the earth. Cool. And then Schmendrick is so like, his coat is getting more and more ragged. Says the rain that renewed Molly did not fall on him, and he seemed ever more parched and deserted, like the land itself. The unicorn could not heal him. A touch of her horn could have brought him back from death, but over despair she had no power, nor over magic that had come and gone. He's just like so desperate to have control of magic. And then as soon as he gets control of magic, he becomes this magnanimous, wise, kind person.
Well, I also love like right when the magic is there, he's like, I am fucking killing it. Did you see that? I'm amazing. I did all this amazing stuff. And it's right after he turns her like into a human.
Oh, well, he has like a hold of the magic for a second. Mm-hmm. And he's still like a whiny, petty little bitch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's and, so yeah, funny.
I love it. He's like, did you fucking see that?
And he's like dancing around, like marching around. Yeah. And Molly's like, what did you do? And he's like, it's fine.
You can turn it back or whatever you want. Now I know. You can just call him back.
He's like, not now, obviously. I can't turn it back.
It'll come to me when I feel like it.
It was really funny.
But I mean, like, when he truly becomes a magician, yeah, when he's able to turn her back, he becomes, like, a totally, like, he's not petty. It's like, now that he has what he wants, he, like, realizes how pathetic he was. I don't know. He just comes into himself, and then he's very cool, and I love him.
Yeah.
For a different reason.
Yeah. Me too. It was just like really.
Also, bless you, Peter S. Beagle, for correctly acknowledging that 37 or 38 is still young. Thank you.
Oh, this is another part that I understand why it isn't in the movie, but I loved what it added to the book, which was the village that was next to King Haggard's.
Hagsgate.
I loved. Basically, that like silence is compliance, you know, that like these people. So basically, these people, their town is like blessed, but like everything around it is like got cursed. And their good fortune rises with Haggard's good fortune, but Haggard is evil. But they also are too selfish. Like they're like, but what if like whoever. If someone were to destroy Hagrid's castle, like we would be fucked. And so we don't want that. But we also know that a child of Hagsgate is going to be the one to
bring it all down.
To bring it down. Yeah. And like we don't want that to happen. We've done everything we could to not have children, except I did find a child and I just left it in the woods. So, you know, it's fine. Turns out King took him in. That's Lear.
And then at the end of the book, when Drin, the guy
you're talking about,
he's like, oh, you were my son. I was
so it's like, bitch, you lied.
Motherfucker.
And I like that he was like, okay, bye. Like, you know, I love
like,
that.
I am absolutely like, this is not, you are not getting the praise for this. But then at the same time, he's like, but I played my part in the story. How am I to blame for having set in motion the events that eventually led to the happy ending? And it's like, ugh, yeah, the Judas argument.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also like...
And there have been articles about how this is like a little bit of a Holocaust story, or could be viewed that way.
I
mean,
I can see that. I can for sure see that, where you're just like, well, like, what was I supposed to do?
We couldn't say anything. We would have been destroyed too. And it's like, well, now you're cursed.
But if you all had said something, then there's more of you than them.
Yeah. If you tie your fortunes in with a dictator,
you're evil.
You will fall with that dictator and he will fall.
So I don't know. I thought that added like a really cool development. But I could also see not only for like time for the movie, but like I could also just see like an exec or something being like, let's not include this part, you know,
maybe
like just being like, it's, you know, it's it complicates things. And like
it's so weird because it's like, I totally agree with you. And I love the Hagsgate part. And I think it is like a vital part of the book. And then at the same time, I would be like, but it's sort of unnecessary.
Like, well, because the thing is, you can take that out. But, yeah, like you could take that whole part out and save yourself a bunch of pages in a script and a bunch of animation time.
Lose anything with the message.
Exactly.
Which is like a very
well, it adds a message.
Rare thing. Like you don't take away from the core story by losing the scene. You just lose like a separate
thesis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but like, you know, movies are short.
Yeah. It's not fucking now where they make like 21 episodes of shows that you're
it's
like,
not a series.
Why? Why? Please, please make it be 10. Cause like, I cannot stand anymore. Mm-hmm. Speaking of The Servant, listen, wished it was 8 episodes.
What's The Servant?
Oh, on Apple TV.
Oh, it's Next to Nothing. I've watched Dickinson. And that's about it.
So it was on, I mean, it's very like, I feel like I could have made something like this. It's very like, it's M. Night Shyamalan. It's, yeah. So you already know that. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, this baby is a fake baby. Cause it's like a real, you know, it's like
fucking
a
fucking fake ass baby.
Yeah, it's like you know, the ones that you get like reborn doll. It's a reborn doll, and the mom who is what is her name from 6 Feet Under? The girl,
Lauren,
the red-haired one,
Ambrose.
Yeah, it's her, and then her brother is Rupert Grint, and it's also unfortunately like an entirely British cast except for her. Doing an American accent. So it's a lot of people talking like this, which is very unfortunate. But it's kind of, you know, like, so then this, they hire her and her husband, hire a nanny to like take care of this real, no, not a real doll. That's a sex doll. Reborn doll. Oh my God.
I don't know what doll is. I don't know that I've ever heard that phrase.
So a reborn doll is when someone, when their baby passes away, they'll get like a replica of their baby as a doll.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
And so they can help people with their grieving, but this is like, she is pretending it is alive.
No and, judgment, but I don't think that would help me.
Yeah. I don't think it would help me either. But to each their own.
Yes.
And I mean, it's not helping this lady in this story because she's pretending it's alive. So she hires this nanny. And then finally the husband is alone in a room with the nanny. And he's like, you don't have to pretend in front of me. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then you're like, what? So like, right. Like from there, you're like, ooh, what the hell? This is kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
Except the way that it unfolds is like, you think it's like maybe that the nanny can do like witchcraft magic.
Fine.
But then it's like she can't. And then you're like, wait, what? I thought she could. Like, it's a whole thing. Like, because then, you know, the husband is like, why are you pretending that the baby's real? And then he starts hearing crying and he's like, what? Yeah. And then he starts like kind of like following the nanny to be like, what's up with this nanny? Because like before that, the baby didn't fucking cry. And then he's a chef. And he was eating some of the food that he was cooking and he starts coughing and just like splinters fucking come out of his throat.
What?
Yeah. And because he's like digging at her and she's making these like little wooden dolls. So it's like the same splinters from the dolls that are coming out of his throat. So you're like, okay. Oh, she can fucking do magic. Right? Like that's obviously. But then they just drop that and it's not about that. Listen, it's like 20 fucking episodes and it's like, why? Like 6, please, or 10. What? Anyway, there's a season 20? 2 out now.
Just say 20?
No, maybe it was 10 episodes and they just renewed another 20.
Oh, maybe. I was like, I'm sorry. No season of anything not on network television is over. Okay, hold on. Let me see here. 13.
Let me see here. Oh, it had. Okay. I'm sorry. No. I got freaked out because they had done the go ahead for 20 more episodes, and I was like, oh, okay. No. So okay, yeah, that hold
on. Absolute like madness.
No. Okay. So it was 10 episodes for the first season, which I felt like it could have been 6.
Uh-huh.
And then season 2, yeah, is 20 episodes. No, I see. 10 more episodes. It's 20 total. Okay. Still, I think it should have been 6 or 8. Because like the first 4 episodes, I was like, damn, this show's pretty good. I mean, it has weird acting. And then it
lost its way.
It did, I think. Oh, well. So that was our bid on The Servant. what else? Oh. I was kind of getting at the part that I really liked about the book that, I mean, we only got more of it because it's like written narration as opposed to like a movie you can only show so much. But I loved that it was like that she, because she's different from all the other unicorns and she doesn't know what she's going to do anymore, and she's like, maybe I'll just like roam the world. Because I've known love and I've known loss, and like that makes me different from every other unicorn. And unicorns don't like, they just go to their glades and stay there. They don't like travel around. So I liked.
She's forever different because Shmendrick changed her into a woman to hide her from the Red Bull.
And I love that that's like kind of also a commentary on like, you know, you're changed forever by people that touch your heart. And I just love that.
Mm-hmm. I love that she retains a little bit of her humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And just the line at the end, and it always got me as a kid too, is I'm different because no unicorn has ever known regret. But I regret.
Yeah.
And it's like she knows that it couldn't have happened any other way, but she at the same time regrets having changed again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that moment when she gets changed back into the unicorn and there's this like apparition of Amalthea left over,
mm-hmm.
like calling out for Lear, and the second Lear turns to reach for her,
yeah,
she just like disappears.
Also in the movie they don't have the unicorn touch him twice. She only touches him to heal
him. That's a shame.
Yeah, I thought that could have been really cute to just like touch his heart and like,
because he says that so pointedly to Lear.
Yeah,
after they have their dreams.
The dream thing. Yeah. Oh my god.
So rather than like in the movie the unicorn like literally comes back and says goodbye to Shmendrick, but not Molly or Lear.
Mm-hmm.
But in the book she appears to each of them in a dream. And to Shmendrick, they have this whole conversation about like what she'll do now and what happened and how she has regrets now. And Molly won't share what happened in her dream. And Lear is so upset.
Well, he keeps asking too. He's like, so like what'd she say?
Like, what'd she say to you guys? Because like, I know what she said to me, but like what'd she say to you?
And then Shmendrick's like, and he makes something up.
Well, because the unicorn told him not to say anything, I think, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Lear says, she appeared to me, but she didn't say anything.
Yeah,
and I was
nothing.
Like, Lear, oh my god. Why, unicorn? Probably because she would hurt her.
What is she going to say?
Yeah, what was she going
to
say?
There's nothing she could. And then Shmendrick says to him, like, well, always, like, keep in mind that she touched you twice. One to heal you and one for you.
The one for you part, I was like, oh. I was like, oh my god. So,
oh, it's so funny. So the difference between Lear staying to be the new king in the movie versus the book is so funny, because in the book He doesn't want to stay. He wants to go with them. He wants to search for the unicorn again. He wants to live his life for the unicorn now, like we talked about. And in the movie, he's like, oh, goodbye. I've never had friends before. You fucking sad sack. I've never had any real friends. just a different kind of sadness. But if, unfortunately, like a funnier sadness.
No, it's
which
funnier.
I don't necessarily agree with. I wanted to read this one other part just for writing's sake, because it's lovely. Also, in the book, King Haggard does have four other guards, mm-hmm. and they're all super old men. And they come in and they love Molly and blah, blah, blah. So they come into the kitchen when she's cooking. Oh, dang, where'd it go? Where did it go? Oh, come on, man. Okay. On page 100. La, la, la. So it's when they go to Hag's Gate and they're talking to Drin and he's explaining everything. And it says, Drin glowered him down and other men began to shout spitefully, but the magician quieted them all. Oh, and he's getting so drunk. It's so funny. Asking, what was the curse? Could it have anything to do with the Red Bull? The name rang coldly, even in the bright room, and Molly felt suddenly lonely. On an impulse, she added her own question, though it had nothing to do with the conversation. Have any of you ever seen a unicorn? It was then that she learned two things. The difference between silence and utter silence. And that she had been right to ask that question.
Yep.
I love silence and utter silence. So good.
Yep.
And then... another description of Schmendrick just being like so mad that Molly is coming with them.
Yeah, I know. He's like,
here we go. Okay. So he's trying to dissuade her. And Schmendrick is always trying to be like such a hard ass and commanding. He just can't do it. He's not good at it. Schmendrick said coldly, looking at the unicorn, we must go. Molly agreed promptly. Aye, before the men stumble on us and slit your throat for cheating them, the poor lads. She looked over her shoulder. I had some things I wanted to take, but they don't matter now. I'm ready. Schmendrick barred her way again as he stepped forward. You can't come with us. We are on a quest. His voice and eyes were as stern as he could make them, but he could feel his nose being bewildered. He had never been able to discipline his nose.
I loved that part.
It's so funny. He had never been able to discipline his nose. It's perfect.
It's really perfect.
It's just really good. He's just really good. I met Peter S. Beagle at a Comic-Con, I think, in 2012, and I got him to sign a copy of Last Unicorn graphic novel that they made.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I got my picture with him.
I have somewhere, I need to find them, some animation cells from the movie.
Oh, cool.
But I don't know where they are. So that's sad for me.
When we were at that Comic-Con, I think it might have been my first. Mike goes every year and has ever since he moved to LA. And I didn't start going, I think, until 2012. And even then, I think I've skipped a couple years because it is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
So we're walking around and he's like trying to find something that will get me excited. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. No, everything's really cool. And then I saw the Peter S. Beagle Last Unicorn booth and I went, oh, my God. And I like ran over there. He was like, oh, I guess we found it.
There's something for everybody at a con.
Mm-hmm.
There really is. I'm trying to see.
Yeah, I'm not sure what more I have to say. It's just like so fucking good. It's so good.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh my God. This part made me misty. Okay, ready? So this is talking about her running around being a unicorn at the end. Then she would run until Okay, so this is when she's running, trying to find, this is before they find the Red Bull. And she's just like running around and she's having like an existential crisis. And this is just her daily routine as they're like looking for the Red Bull and King Haggard. Then she would run until morning to ease the ache, swifter than rain, swift as loss, racing to catch up with the time when she had known nothing at all but the sweetness of being herself. Often then, between the rush of one breath and the reach of another, it came to her that Schmendrick and Molly were long dead, King Haggard as well, and the Red Bull met and mastered, so long ago that the grandchildren of the stars had seen it all happen, were withering now, turning to coal, and that she was still the only unicorn left in the world. I was like, unicorn?
Yeah, she's so upset by their presence because she knows they're going to die one day. Mm-hmm. And it's like an immortal creature should never get emotionally involved with a mortal creature because of the guaranteed loss.
Yeah.
That's sort of the implication, although it's not explicitly said. It feels to me to be subtext.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, this book is so beautiful. And I think, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, that's watch it. I believe I had to rent it. I think I don't think it's streaming anywhere, but it was like $3.99. So, huh?
I think it is streaming somewhere,
or maybe I didn't rent it. I can't remember. I've been watching a lot of movies. not a lot of movies, but more than I've been watching. I don't really watch.
It's movies streaming that much. If you have Prime.
Oh, yes, Prime. That's what it was. I watched it on Prime. Oh, no, but you have to still rent it, I think. Because I have Prime.
Oh, yeah, it's...
So if you click on it, then this, it's like, rent it.
If you just do a Google search, it's you can watch with Shout Factory TV if you do a 7-day free trial.
I did not do that, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's you have to have a subscription on top of the Prime subscription.
Yeah.
Which is very annoying.
Yeah,
very annoying. Or you could own it on Blu-ray like I do.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to have to rent it, you may as well buy it. This, to me, is another nearly perfect adaptation.
Really good adaptation. Like, truly, I really love it. I mean, there are certain things
except
which are
just
like...
Except for the fact that they let Mia Farrow sing.
Right. Yeah.
Why?
The Mia Farrow singing part
Mia
is
Farrow
a little bit...
Mia Farrow and Jeff Bridges singing. Mm-mm.
There's something truly interesting about, like, a very sleepy Jeff Bridges singing. And, like, there's a part where he has to do, like, an octave jump. And I was, like, so nervous for him.
Did you say something, like, as though he was going to, like, have to jump off a bridge? Or was I thinking that?
I think you were thinking that. Because it was truly, like he goes, like, like, he goes, like, above it and then below it and then hits it. And I'm like, why we could it just was that sing. The only take
like,
that
you
we
may have had me sing this song for the unicorn. Like, what are you doing? And
yeah.
I found on YouTube because Mia Farrow sings the unicorns or Amalthea's at that point solo. Mm-hmm. About like it, now that I'm a woman
everything has changed. And then at that part, I'm like, no, Mia.
Has changed. You're like, why did they do this? And then in the duet, or like Jeff Bridges' Lear's song to Amalthea, she joins in at some point for a duet. And it's this fucking golden, beautiful, silvery bell of a voice. And you're like, where was this bitch earlier?
This bitch was not
And it turns out this
Mia
bitch
Farrow.
Did record Now That I'm a Woman. And for some reason, they still used Mia Farrow. Why?
Yeah. I mean,
so you
that,
can find
that,
it on YouTube. It's so much better. I think
it's really good.
You'll see it. It's in German. Not the
I
words,
also, the duet, I feel like there's just only so much heavy lifting that she can do. Because yes. There are parts where I was like... I do not know what notes are supposed to be happening at this time. Like, it is
it's like,
truly.
Now I know the way.
And it's like, okay, you just go and I'll try and
then
harmonize
you
with you in that way.
Or I'll follow you. How about?
Okay. So let's both sing it and try to follow mm-hmm. each other.
Okay. So we'll play follow the follower.
Okay. What words are you going to sing?
Oh, I was going to sing. So it's like once when I was searching. So that's your part, right?
Okay.
Okay. So then I'll go.
Okay. So
I'm sorry. I meant you go and then. Okay. So I'll take you because you're the singer. I'm Jeff Bridges. I will follow you, or should I go because I'm not going to know where to meet up with you?
I think it'll be the best if we just go at the same time and see what happens.
Oh, wing it. Okay.
Okay. Once when I what
I
was searching.
How do I?
Okay. Well, it's already recorded.
You know what? We can't do another take. Rankin and Bass has pulled the plug on the money. So
perfect. It does just feel like truly every note is an adventure for everybody involved. Like, they're just like, where are we going?
Very funny.
Man, the person that left a bad review about our singing must hate The Last Unicorn.
You know what? They can go fuck off, because I never said I was a good singer, and I don't know why they're acting like I needed to be told. We mentioned the terrible review on Twitter and on a Patreon episode. I'm not going to give it any more fucking oxygen.
No.
Anyway, sometimes we sing. I never think it's good. It's fine. Fuck you.
Listen, we don't think that it sounds good. Like, we're just doing silly little songs.
Yeah, sometimes people sing for fun, even though they're not professionals. I don't know if you've heard of this. Sometimes okay, so there's this thing. It's sort of like, you couldn't really say that it originated in Japan per se, but so it's called karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps it is pronounced karaoke. And you get together with your friends. You're either in like a bar setting or like a private room. And what it is you get a mic and there's a backing track of it. And you can, and it's popular songs, sometimes musical theater, depending on the karaoke establishment that you are going to. And you sing, they put the lyrics up on a screen and you follow and you sing for your friends. And it's a good time. Mm-hmm. It's just like fun. You can do it for like birthdays. Or you can just do it like fun Saturday night activities. Sometimes there are like probably contests. And the best part about karaoke is that you don't have to be a professional, and everybody will just like cheer you on, because that's what like being a compassionate human being is like.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah. So there's like even a whole, I would say perhaps pastime of people singing and not having to be perfect. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So reviewer, who's apparently, you know, been with us for such a long time, ever since the days of My Favorite Murder, I guess I would just say, look up karaoke, see if it's for you, or quit being such a fucking cunt and get the fuck off our podcast.
Because truly, you can like even just sing in your house, you know, like walking around.
Yeah, like in the shower. Did you know you sometimes can do that? People sing in the shower.
In the shower, like you can like sing little singy songs. For you.
And it's typically free, which is great because, all right, so there's this thing that like music, music, like look into it. It tends to make people happy.
Yeah. You know what? You know what makes me like an absolute psychopath?
What?
That I don't listen to music in the car. I just listen to nothing. Yeah, I'm just like, I'm depressed. So like, I just.
Oh.
Sit in silence. Like, I
sure a moment for you.
Sure. I mean, a lot of times it's just me like just completely broken down and like nothing. Like this, so it's usually
broken down to your component parts and just like sitting. Okay.
Yeah, just sitting and driving in complete silence. Cool. And like sometimes if I'm driving and Mike is in the car, he'll be like, can we like put something on? And I'm like, I don't want to listen to music.
You absolute
like,
psychopath.
It's not that I like sometimes I do like to, if I'm in a good mood, I'll like be like, oh, I feel like listening to music. But a lot of times I'm just very unhappy. And so I like don't want to listen. I don't know what it is. Like, and I will literally be like, I don't feel like listening to music. I don't know.
Not even like a podcast?
Sometimes I listen to a podcast, but sometimes it's just silence.
I mean, if that's how you want to live your life.
Things are really dark for me right now. I download. So I know things are like really dark when I start playing a lot more mobile games. And I just downloaded this game. Oh, Lindsay, I'm like so embarrassed to share it. It's called Dress Up Time Princess.
I'm sorry. Okay. First of all, I'm sorry.
I played it like all day yesterday. My screen time was like 8 hours, and I was like, just playing this game, and it's like it's like a mix of like dress up game, like romance visual novel. It's like a mix of those two types of games, but like,
sure.
Truly, I'm not well because I was playing it a lot, and I can't say that it brings me joy. So anyway, if you're in a really dark place.
Sorry. I've been muted a little more than I would be otherwise, but I am listening because Edwin is barking at a fucking delivery again.
So anyway, if you're looking for a game and you're feeling really depressed, try Dress Up Time Princess. Everything has changed.
That's exactly what Mia Farrow sounds like. I'm sorry. That's not me singing. That's my impression of Mia Farrow singing. I have done this impression many times over the last close to 5 years we've been doing this podcast.
Yes. So just her. I do love her acting choice for the voice of the unicorn.
Oh, my God. Things as the like unicorn. This. She's great. I love.
Yeah. I love the choice.
Acting. But singing, it didn't have to be her. I know for a fact that you've recorded this other woman.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Why is the question. And they do that for Disney movies all the time. So really, I don't see why she.
Yeah, it's like it makes me. I suspect this was Mia Farrow's doing. Like she insisted that she wanted to sing. On her recording being in it. And then it was just like so bad with the Jeff Bridges song that they used the other woman.
Yeah, I think that they were like. Okay, alone, we can, you know, I think that once, if you are not a good singer and you throw in having to do harmonies with someone else who is not a good singer, shit really hits the wall pretty quick. Yeah. and
too much.
So, too much.
Yeah,
but it is a really beautiful movie. I think it's a wonderful adaptation of a very beautiful book.
God, the book is so good. You guys have to read it.
It's so, so, so good. I'm like, sorry.
We
I just
are
dropped
on
a bunch
a
of dice.
We roll with Fantasy February, I must say. So good. What?
So good.
Soothing balm in a world, in a troubled world.
Yes.
And it's like you were saying, like, I like dark things. And this is, like, somehow these two books have been uplifting and yet painful.
Yeah, well, and also because they are earnest without being saccharine and cheesy. Like, and I feel like, I don't know if Peter Beagle is British.
He is not.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Because because you know how that, like, British earnestness that's, like, not cheesy, but it's, like, so heart-touching?
Also, I totally see why you might wonder if he's British, because it is a very, like, British kind of wit.
Yeah, it's dry.
But he is, I think he's from Brooklyn. He comes from a family of, at least at the time, very famous Jewish artists.
Oh, cool.
Which is why people suspect it is like a bit of a Holocaust.
Well,
metaphor.
I mean, even before knowing his like personal connection, like I suspected it was, at least with the fucking people, Hag's Gate. The Hag's Gate town of
like
people that are just
searching for her people.
Yeah. Yeah. And like being rounded up by like this bull that's in charge, like either in charge of or being in controlled by the King Haggard. Oh, also, the thing that I loved, the bull is very scary.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very scary. Scary in the movies and also very scary in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, I loved the detail of what makes this bull so scary is that the bull doesn't have any feelings about you. The bull doesn't hate you. The bull is just going to, like, is ordered to and therefore will, like.
He's just, he's working a job.
Yeah. And it kind of reminds, but like that kind of like just unstoppable force,
mm-hmm.
right? That mm-hmm. unstoppable force of pushing and pushing and pushing and being so huge. The bull is huge, huge, huge. It's a very like, it reminds me of like villains that are very scary, like Galactus or like even weirdly, I'm going to say, Jason Voorhees, which is just this like
that keeps coming, just totally coming relentless.
And coming relentless and just and not fast, not and just coming for you. And I loved too, right, that like the people of Hagshead or what the fuck is this place?
Hagsgate.
Jesus fucking Christ. These people of Hagsgate, right, where they're like, oh, well, like we couldn't. What were we supposed to do? Stand up to him? All that it took for the Red Bull to be stopped was for the unicorn to turn around and fight him because he is not engineered to kill. He is engineered. Or he's not engineered to fight. He's engineered to herd.
Yeah.
He and was so just like
there to drive them into the sea.
Yes.
And so that's how Lear fulfills his part in the story as a hero is he stands up to the bull. He gets trampled and the unicorn in. She avenges him by then turning on the bull.
And none of the unicorns had done that before.
Mm-hmm.
And because so he just like seems that, like
such a force, like you were saying.
Yeah. And that right there, right? Like that right there disproves the defense of Hagsgate, right? Like them being like, well, what were we supposed to do? It's like all it takes is this, like, for the unicorn, it was blind rage, but like bravery in the face of something that does the thing that seeks to destroy you operates on the assumption that you think you cannot survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you stand up to them, it's like, oh, you've taken away their reality.
Well, I would say which the is, only there's a slight difference. It's not, I mean, it is part they call the Hagsgate residents on not helping the unicorns, but the curse originated from the witch who wasn't getting paid.
So well, it's that like was the other witch thing is that they didn't the stand castle. Up for her.
They didn't stand up for the witch not getting paid, and then she cursed them to be forever tied with King Haggard's fortunes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on top of that, they didn't stand up for the unicorns. Just
well, also, but like, I mean, they should have stood up for the witch first of all.
Yes.
Because she wasn't getting paid.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, what were we supposed to do? Also, like, if we do anything to Hagrid, like the bull, like, because they do reference the bull. And they're like, well, we can't stand up to, like, he has the bull. We'll die.
Yeah.
Which it just, you know, I really loved this story. It was, you know, allegorical without being didactic.
Yeah. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it was great. Loved yep. it.
Really, loved really it. Good.
Mm-hmm.
It's I consider this a must read.
Absolutely must read.
Mm-hmm.
So check it out, read it, watch the movie. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We really, really appreciate you.
Yeah.
Extra special thank you to our Patreon listeners. Y'all are keeping us alive right now. We've got a lot of fun content on there. patreon.com/teencreeps.
You know what? That sometimes was weird. We default to the early 2000s.
Sometimes. www. And an extra, extra special thank you to our Patreon producers.
Thank you, Amanda Nangle.
Ann Dwyer.
Ashley Fritz.
Brian Petty II.
Claire Moore.
Courtney McPhail.
Danielle Lamana.
Danny.
Emily Pooley.
Emma
Murray,
Gabriela Santiago,
Gianna Fernandez,
Grace Armstrong,
Jeremy Kronk,
Jessica Smith Harper,
Jonathan Venable,
Jordan Colwick,
Karen Lewis,
Kat Miller,
Katie Lilly,
Katie Olsner,
Kelly Burns,
Christerina,
Landry Desmond,
Laura Hooper,
Lonnie Martin,
Luke Bartek,
Mandalay Wolschlager,
Marcy Raquel Blackwell,
Marco Pavlicic,
Melody,
Megan Lozier,
Micah Yunus,
Miguel Camacho,
Miranda Hester,
Molly Marks,
Oscar Gallegos,
Randy Klett,
Rashad Black,
Rogue Kalahua,
Saoirse Descaro,
Sarah
Jaggers,
Sarah Nichelle,
Sarah Wallen,
Sasha Gibson,
Sydney Bollinger,
Tristan Buckner,
Victoria Beck,
Victoria Gray,
Victoria Valdez.
And Wendy Bartos.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you. If you are a Patreon subscriber and you haven't gotten your stickers, just go into your Patreon and double check that your address is there, because I noticed that a lot of you guys don't have your addresses there. So that's why I have not been able to send that stuff out. And if it is there and you haven't gotten it yet, just check your, keep your eyes on your mailbox. But just a reminder to make sure that that stuff's updated so that way we can get you your goodies.
Good call. Something I was going to say, I guess I forgot. Oh, we are doing a fun new variation on our minisodes because if you guys are unaware, on our Patreon, we have at the $1 level, just thank you. At the $5 level, mm-hmm. you get two public domain theaters a month, and you get 2 to 3 minisodes, depending on how many weeks are in a month. Mm-hmm. And for our minisodes, we do like some fun quizzes, and we've started incorporating just like pop culture controversy chats. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about.
Yeah, so we did Armie Hammer,
Ilaria Baldwin, the pharma bro and the journalist. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about, we're going to be recording an episode talking about the Britney Spears documentary episode of that.
Oh my God. If you guys have not watched it, watch it.
Framing Britney Spears.
Framing Britney Spears. It's a New York Times Presents. It's episode 6 on Hulu. Just like watch it. It's like, it's such
We did her dirty.
Yeah. We hurt her. Like the public hurt her. And it's just a great, it brings up a lot of questions about like mental health and conservatorship, and also just like how cruel everybody was in the early 2000s.
90s too. It's like, Lorena Babbitt,
mm-hmm.
Monica Lewinsky, Britney Spears. We totally burned Janet Jackson for no reason. Like, mm-hmm. what the fuck, man?
I mean, Lindsay, once you watch this, some of this like interview footage with Britney Spears is I started crying with her. Like, like it's just like the meanest shit, like them being like, okay, here's this footage of someone like saying something terrible about you. What do you have to say? And then she's just like crying. It's awful. Eesh. It's awful. The shit that we did to her is so, we fucking built her up.
We loved
her. Idolized her. Down. And then when she became too powerful, we fucking were like, you're too powerful and we can't wait to see you get fucking destroyed. It was awful.
Yeah, we just love people falling. Or like Lindsay Lohan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lindsay Lohan. That was like really mean. I mean, it's just.
Amanda Bynes.
Oh, yes. Amanda Bynes. Yes.
It was an ugly, ugly time to be like a teen star having a mental break.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The 2000s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's what we're going to do for our next minisode.
We're talking about that on the next minisode, if that's mm-hmm. the kind of content you're interested in. And then at the $8 and above level, you get, on top of that, you get one episode a month where we cover a book outside of the teen creeps genre. Everybody who is subscribed at $8 and above, you are automatically entered in a raffle to choose the book for that month.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one we read was A Cozy Mystery
that we
loved. Rita Mae Brown and Sneaky Pie Brown, chose by listener Ingrid. And it was delightful.
It was so good. Honestly.
Wish you were here.
Wish you were here. That was like literally the conceit of that book is that a cat writes it. Yep. And honestly, we love it. Yep. So so check that out. Patreon.com/teencreeps. We got a lot of really
mm-hmm.
cool stuff on there. And you get stickers in the mail, which is mm-hmm. why you should update your address, please.
And if you
and then $15.
Yeah. And then at $15 level, you get all those things. And we obviously give you a shout out on the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's why you're called our Patreon producers, because of that level of giving. And if you can't afford to give, which totally understandable, I've been out of work for almost a year. You can support the podcast by telling people about it, tweeting about it, posting about it on whatever other social media platform you use. And you can leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah, gotta really, I guess we have to let you guys know. 5 stars is the only thing that helps us, guys.
We don't need your, I was going to say, just tweet at us your criticism. I truly don't care. If you don't like the podcast, stop listening to the podcast. Yeah. We don't. need your ire.
No, yeah. If you don't like something that's
then
free,
it's not for you.
You can stop listening. it's very easy.
If you don't like us, no one's making you listen to us. Anyway, I want to end on a positive note. So thank you to all of our listeners. We really, really appreciate you. And thank you to our Patreon subscribers. We really, really appreciate you as well.
Yeah. And Lindsay, I appreciate you. Doing this show is like such a beacon of light in a really dark time.
Yeah. Definitely a highlight of my life. Truly. Like that sounded really life. Like hyperbolic and I was going to say week and then I went, you know what? Life.
No, same, same, same. I just didn't want to sound like a fucking simp.
You know what? I simp for my friends.
No, I do too. I simp for my friends.
I simp for my friends and my project. Yeah, so even when we hate the book, you guys should know that we adore doing the podcast and we're just very appreciative that anybody else cares to listen.
Yeah, and even when we're accidentally reading fucking Herodica that you guys suggest for us to cover on Public Domain Theater. Who did that? Who did that?
Story was so funny. It's been a real delight picking Public Domain Theater back up. I think we've been doing it since last September. We decided to resurrect it for a couple slightly shorter eps a month, and we haven't had guests. I suppose we might in the future, but we haven't yet, and it's been just as fun as it ever was.
Especially because some of y'all, those wild card suggestions.
I'm fairly sure we just read a story that we had done before.
Oh, me too.
Both of us, during the reading, we were like, have we done this before? And then a listener was like, have you guys done this before?
Yeah.
So we may have, but it was.
We may have.
You know what? If you haven't seen it, it's new to you. Must see TV Thursdays on NBC.
Must see.
That's all for this episode. Love the book. Please read it. And next week, we are covering The Princess Bride, which our listener who said it was like fat shaming and racist tweeted at us again to let us know that it seems like that was just the intro and the story itself has been blessedly free of that.
I have read the whole thing. It comes back once towards the end.
Okay.
But the story itself is not that way. There's just like a part where I was like,
It's a shame.
You don't have to use a racial slur.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well. You know
so
what?
There's that.
Older books are older books.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Anyway,
I'm still looking forward to reading it. Not looking forward to that part of it, but great story if I remember. Have you watched the movie yet?
No. I don't know why I screamed. No, I have not.
It was just more like a spirited answer. I wouldn't say you screamed.
Thank you.
It was a spirited reply.
No!
So I'm curious to see if you like our white-ass movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I liked the white-ass book, aside from certain racismo, but...
Racismo.
I felt like it was... I enjoyed reading it, so...
Good.
I think I would enjoy the movie.
Yeah. I don't think
Although apparently it's, like, very different.
Is it?
That's what people say, so I don't know.
I don't...
I'll watch the movie and see how I feel.
Yeah. Because the listener who said it was kind of fat-shaming also said that, like, the story itself basically plays out like the screenplay.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just the, like, Peter Falk parts that are different.
I think so.
You guys, suggest to us, make some suggestions for our final Fantasy February story because we don't know what we're going to cover yet. And we're going to review...
Something that's, like, a bigger title, something that... is sort of like a 70s, 80s, 90s nostalgia grab just
and,
to fit the theme.
Not fit with super the long. I know it's fantasy, but like let's keep it kind of, you know, realistic.
We're sorry. We don't have time. We devote a lot of time to the podcast, but we can't read a 30-hour long book.
No.
Like literally, I don't have that time.
No, I don't either.
Beforehand
I will
to read that.
Possibly die.
We're recording the Patreon episodes. We're reading a book for the Patreon. We're I just did somebody else's podcast where I had to read a book. People love inviting us on podcasts where we have to read a book. And other stuff. I'm so sorry. I would love to read Myths of Avalon. Oh, except I wouldn't, because apparently the author is a fucking
is a molester.
Molester pedophile.
Yeah. We found out. Never just mind. Found out.
Don't feel bad anymore.
Bullet dodged. I am, you know, oof. Aren't you so fucking happy you didn't devote 30 fucking hours to reading that book and then find out it's a fucking chimo?
My God.
Chimo means child molester, FYI.
I was like, I absolutely did not know what you meant by that. And I was like, I don't, I'm just going to act like I do.
No, I only, Micah says that a lot. He'll call, like, we'll just watch a lot of like Forensic Files and he'll be like, that guy looks like a chimo. He always just like criticizes people
for a god awful cursed thing.
Yeah. And, or he'll be like, sometimes people with just like really bad hair will show up and he'll just be like, bangs.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, can I tell you something really quick?
Yes.
Before we go, this will be a funny thing. Okay, so we were watching, have you seen the documentary?
Only if it's funny.
It is funny. It's funny. Okay. It's cute. So I was watching this documentary called Jasper Mall. Have you seen it?
No, but that sounds familiar.
I think you would like it. It is about a dying mall called Jasper Mall.
I have heard of this.
Yes.
And yes, I bet I would.
Yeah, it's great. It's a little depressing, of course. Sure. But it's like a mall that has not really changed since like 1995. And it's just, you know, stores are leaving and it's like the only stores in there are like a sporting goods store and then like a florist called Robin's Nest, and like a couple other things. And then there's like the guy that is like the janitor slash security guard. Mm. And there's like only one guy that does that. And so it's like, you know, it's following the people that work and attend this mall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also mostly just like old people that come to the mall to hang out.
Right.
But there's this one old guy. He sees the camera. He gets all excited. So he comes over and he's like, I got a joke for you. And they're also very Southern. And he's like, I got a joke. And he keeps looking at the camera like, and he goes, oh, so a teacher says, who's the first man on earth? And the guy says, horse Cartwright. And the teacher says, no, it's Adam. And he goes, oh, I knew it was one of them Cartwrights.
And that's a really good joke.
It's really fucking funny. And it is only funny if you're Southern. Like if you say it in a Southern accent, I knew it was one of them Cartwrights. Like, come on, Adam Cartwright is the first man. Like, that's so fucking funny. Or he thought that the first man was Horace Cartwright. Like, so good.
What a delightful joke.
So funny. So I'll leave you with that.
What a good ending to this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And one that we all saw. People were like, oh, last unicorn episode. Well, they're probably going to do that Cartwright joke. But like, I'll still enjoy it, even though I see it coming from a million miles away.
That southern street joke.
Good stuff. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you. Wear a mask. Get your vaccine as soon as you are eligible. And keep it creepy.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com. And subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.